America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah. So, this episode is going to be for May 11th, 2018, and, well, shit. The thing is, it was kind of a slow news day as far as, like, the amount of stuff we got, but it also just so happens that the stuff we got is pretty much primo.
Yeah.
Some of it is just tear your hair out insane. And some of it is just, it's just, you want to expect better, but
really,
people are
just
people.
Know.
Yeah.
Some of it makes The Onion look like a documentary.
Yeah.
Hardcore news.
Which, you know, there's a point where I figure one day on April, The Onion is going to have an April 1st joke where it's like, yeah, we're shutting down The Onion. We just can't do this shit anymore.
I want to say they started a new spinoff called Resistance Hole.
Yeah, which is sort of them making fun of the McResistance.
Yeah.
You know, also we've got stuff like, well, there's that little hot volcano in Hawaii that's currently causing some serious havoc. Yeah, you probably forgot, there's a volcano in Hawaii and it erupts every few years. And for some reason everyone forgets about it after it happens.
All those also, islands are formed by volcanoes.
Yeah. Also, the NRA now has a new president and I can't fucking believe it. You'll find out later. Also, we now know when the U.S.-North Korea summit's going to be held, and it's going to be held in Singapore. I guess that's June?
Yeah.
During
E3 week.
Yep. Well, I hope they pop, at least somebody will pop in to Palm Beach Seafood and get some delicious chili crab, but whatever. Singapore is actually, Singapore is sort of like Disneyland if they publicly whipped people for making litter.
Yeah, it's an interesting country to say the least.
Yeah. Also, we've got some TV news, including a certain Adult Swim cartoon that finally is getting renewed.
Yay.
And we got some music news involving the likes of Nine Inch Nails and Dr. Dre. That Dr. Dre story is going to be fucking
funny.
Yeah. And a movie from our childhoods is getting a reboot. You'll find out later. But before we do any of that, let's start off the show as we always do. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So this week I'm still going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Didn't get as much time to watch as many as I wanted, so I just watched Thor. Probably should have watched that before the Avengers, because, yeah, those two movies directly tie in, so
yep.
Now I have to go through and, like, look at the, there's, like, a chart on the internet to figure out what order you're supposed to watch these in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I gotta keep doing that. I liked it. Thor was kind of fun. It was a little offbeat, but, you know, hey.
Yeah. To be completely honest, the first Thor movie really isn't as good as the ones that come after it.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, then I guess I'm in for some good times ahead, because I actually kind of enjoyed the first one, so.
Yeah. Are you also noticing the sort of stingers that they do at the end of every movie now?
Yeah, you kind of have to wait for the end of the credits, and there's always, like, a little extra scene there, and yeah, that's how I figured out I was supposed to watch Avengers after Thor, because those two things connect. So,
as far as you've gotten now, which is the movie that has probably underwhelmed you?
The one that has underwhelmed me the most, I think, actually was probably the first Avengers movie, to be perfectly honest.
All right.
Yeah.
I think part of the appeal of the Avengers is you kind of have to watch the other movies first.
Yeah.
Because they're all kind of leading up to it.
Yeah. I had watched most of them except for Thor up until that one, so yeah. I don't know. It's it was just kind of a slow build for that mm-hmm. movie, which I think I heard they kind of sorted out for the second and third movies. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back into that. The next one's probably going to be, yeah, I'm going to have to watch Iron Man 3, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch that, and then Captain America Winter Soldier, which I've heard is really good. So
it's shockingly good.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch that, and yeah, and just keep going with that, and probably by the next, you know, couple of weeks to a month, I'll have gotten all the way caught up, so
mm-hmm.
I don't have that many that I'm missing, so yeah, anyways. Other than that, I watched Batman Ninja, which was a thing.
Yeah, that's the anime, right?
Yeah. It's like, let's take all of the anime tropes and, like, smash them into one thing and see what happens. And also Batman.
Yeah.
And ninjas.
And ninjas.
And giant robots.
And giant robots.
And talking monkeys.
And talking monkeys.
And giant Batman.
And giant Batman.
Yeah. You see where this is going?
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous. I can't say that it's not enjoyable, because you know, it is just kind of fun if you don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those that it will leave you going, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and they also do...
Would you believe that the guy who wrote that is the same guy who wrote Gurren Lagann?
Probably.
Yeah, he wrote the script.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's worth the watch if you can track it down. I mean, the Blu-ray is out. I think it's on streaming services, so yeah, give it a watch. It's fun, and they also do the little stinger things at the end now, too. So,
yep.
I'm guessing there's going to be more stuff like mm-hmm. that, more Batman animated. And I'm still puttering my way through Death's End. Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah.
It went... now there's something about fairy tales and bath soap and, yeah, glutton fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that's leading somewhere, I'm pretty sure. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, Tian Ming and, what's her name? So, yeah, it's still enjoyable, but, yeah, it does kind of occasionally go way off the rails. And one thing I have noticed that even... when he seems to go off the rails, there's usually a very good reason for it later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he manages to wrap that up, because I'm only about halfway through, and there's a lot that has happened so far. So,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, the whole attempted genocide of the human race. Yeah. That was a thing that nearly happened. And then, broadcast to the universe resulting in Trisolaris going kaboom.
Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah, lots of stuff happening in this book. Like, thinking about it in terms of a TV series, I have no idea how the fuck they're going to shoot this. I really don't.
It really does look like something that is impossible to make.
Yeah.
Because the concepts in that book are brain-breaking just in word description, that to try and actually visualize it, it's almost a fool's errand.
Yeah, well, I mean, we haven't even managed to get a decent adaptation of Dune yet, and that the scale of that is way less than what's going on here. So
yeah,
good luck with that, Amazon. So I don't want to. I'm glad I don't have your job, because
well, technically, they've only said that at the moment they're only working on the first book, which is actually of smaller scale than the two that come after it, so...
Yeah, but I think they're doing a season per book, so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's going to be interesting on how...
Yeah, that's going to be fun. wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's good stuff, though.
All right, Chris, are you back?
Yeah.
Okay, you go ahead.
Yeah, so I've been watching a fair bit of Netflix of late, mm-hmm. Dear White People... season 2 started either today or last Friday, and about 2 episodes in, and it's still really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's continuing on from where the last season left off with the protest going on, where there's a lot of like racial unrest on the college campus. Mm-hmm. And it sort of comes to a head at the end, especially with the news that they plan to integrate into the black fraternity, or not the fraternity, but the house where they put all the black kids in.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a lot of white people in there,
mm-hmm.
which brings a lot of issues for some of the black kids, as well as some positives. But yeah, there's a lot of weird shit going on so far. It's still a lot of just fallout from what happened then, and just following some of the characters and seeing sort of their issues, or mostly it's been issues so far. There's a nice thing with Sam, the main character, in the first episode where she gets into Twitter spats, essentially, of people that, with the alt, like the alt-right,
mm-hmm.
Anonymous accounts for the somebody at the college.
Yep.
Sort of displays her sort of essentially spending like an entire weekend just constantly tweeting shit at it as it's insulting her and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And her trying to figure out how to balance her reactions versus living her life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So far, that's been really nice. I also watched the John Mulaney special, comedy special.
Mm-hmm.
It's on there, and that is really quite good.
Really?
Yeah, he does a good job there. Especially there's one bit where he's talking about school assemblies.
Mm-hmm.
And him being from Chicago, getting a visit by a policeman who investigates child homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Cases, who goes by the name of J.J. Bittenbinder. And he is a very interesting man. If you Google him, you'll see that he actually responded to some of the things that John mentioned in his bits about this, sort of the horrifying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He would do like the Stranger Danger stuff, sort of assemblies. And he talks about being scarred to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And learning about primary locations and secondary locations.
Yeah.
Sort of talking about how he would say, oh, you know, they take you to the primary location, you have like 60% chance of surviving. But if they take you to a secondary location, it's slim to none.
Yeah.
And talk about how he never trusts parties that want to go to a secondary location. and that sort of stuff. But also talks about the cop who would wear cowboy hats in two consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
Also has a big handlebar mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Very bushy mustache, all that sort of stuff. And just describes these vivid details, and I guess word got to him because he's retired now.
Yeah.
He's like, I would never wear a cowboy hat with, you know, his normal outfit. But he would do, like, cow wrangling and all that sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
in his spare time. But yeah, it's really weird that there's a comedy show that talked about a former cop who weirdly has to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows you kind of how desperate people are for stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that he actually had to respond to this stuff. So, I didn't really need this, but it's kind of ridiculous in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of his special is pretty good. He talks about the idea of paying for college,
mm-hmm.
and then them hitting you up later for more money. Talks about how essentially he paid them $120,000 for his education and home and board and all that. It's like, oh, I thought I already paid you for this. you guys no longer are teaching me, so you get no more money. And that sort of stuff. Some good bits about that. And yeah, it's a good show. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot more on Netflix I need to watch because the new episodes for the Bill Nye Saves the World's out. I got to check that out. I got to watch the remix of season 4 for Arrested Development because they announced season 5 starts on May 29th.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I think there's still a bunch more stuff I need to get back to Netflix. Just has a lot of good stuff right now. As for games, I've been playing a game called 2MD VR Football. As you can probably guess, it is a VR football game.
Mm-hmm.
It is made by Truant Pixel, who made a VR game called VEV. I think it's Viva X Vivo.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I assume, Phil, you have that PS2 dashboard theme for the PS4.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got that.
That's them. Hmm. They make a bunch of themes as well.
Hmm.
And yeah, so this is a first-person VR football game where you are the QB. You throw passes to the wide receivers. All the other players that are not you are like tackle dummies.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of simplify things a bit that way. And yeah, the controls are pretty well done as far as the throwing, having good throwing motions and all that. The only problem is my ceiling here is not that tall, so I've hit my ceiling a bunch. Trying to stand up and do it. They say you can sit down and do it. I don't know that that's necessarily great either. But yeah, it plays pretty well. It's mostly kind of an arcade game where you're going through sort of two-minute scenarios. You're down 6-0, and you just need to get a touchdown to win. And that can be more challenging than it seems, because being in first person, you don't necessarily have the greatest view of where your receivers are at. You do get to see the routes drone on the grass, and when you're in the main menus, you can actually redo all the plays.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of move the receivers all around on the they have it on like a whiteboard, and you pick up a marker to actually redraw the routes, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You can just make them stupid as hell, or you can try and draw like more realistic routes. And it's pretty well done. They have a lot of customization. It's not as much as I would like, but you can sort of change colors. And they have like RGB settings you can change for that stuff to get the colors you want.
Mm-hmm.
That works pretty well. They have set names. I think the team I picked is the Princesses. I think the further you get in the game, beating all the teams, you unlock more names for yours. Like, I unlocked ones like Androids. They have a bunch of silly names.
Mm-hmm.
They also have voices for your quarterback. And I have, like, a robot voice.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of them, like normal football-style ones, as well as just silly ones, obviously, like robots. I think there's a woman voice. The other woman is, like, high-pitched or something like that. But what's also cool is if you hold down the move button on the move controller, you pull up the voice. It has voice support, so you can just yell the code name for the play to switch, which is pretty cool, though it's not really that useful because you're not competing against another player.
Yeah.
You have to like hide these plays, but it's pretty neat touch. And yeah, they got the stadiums are actually really cool. The one that's the home stadium for the Princesses has a part of it when you win that a dragon busts out and destroys like this like castle wall that it was hiding behind.
Hmm.
So you got like this just big piece of like castle wall just comes flying at you at the end of the game, which is pretty neat. There's one that's like a 16-bit, like a Super Nintendo style design. Has like a big giant Super Nintendo controller around the big screen.
Yeah.
And the big screen is actually pretty nice because it lets you actually see the play as the players like running with the ball and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like after you throw it, you can look up there and see what's happening. And yeah, after you win a game, they have like a little ring toss thing. You can throw balls through there for added score stuff. But yeah, it's pretty simplistic in terms of what it's trying to do, because it's just the two-minute drill kind of thing, and you're just trying to see how many games you can get through. I think I've gotten through I've won two, so I've gotten to the third and failed. But yeah, it's pretty neat. It's on sale right now for $10. I think it's pretty well worth that as far as getting some sports stuff. I'd definitely like to see more of a full thing, but for this, it's pretty good. It's certainly a lot better than past attempts by like Madden and NFL 2K trying to do first-person football, which doesn't work because you have no good way to look around and get context for what's going on around you. Whereas here, it's as simple as just looking around. Yeah, sitting here trying to move a stick and then having to wait for it to look around. It works well. I've also been playing more Strange Journey. Now I can actually talk about Redux. So the embargo ended for previews a few days ago. I am in the second area. I do not know how far I'm allowed to talk. It's... So far, it's been quite good. The main issues I have is it's a little bit overly wordy. They very much try to be hardcore on the sci-fi aspect of it.
Yeah.
That leads to the issue of not having... Like that thing in JRPGs where it'll just continue from line to line without you having to sit button through it. That's not here. So that's kind of annoying. There's a couple times I've been playing it before bed. I wake up an hour later is just sitting at the one screen. It's like, I just tuned out and fell asleep. It's not great. I'd like to be able to get through that stuff a little bit faster. They do have, like, text settings just to display faster, but I'd like it to be able to just continue through so I can just follow along. They do have a nice thing where you can just hit down on the D-pad to button through instead of just having to do with A or B or whatever it is. I always like when they offer more ways to do that stuff. So you can just like hold the, like a Dragon Quest does this, so I can just hold the left side of the controller and just hit the D-pad to button through dialogue.
Yeah.
Instead of necessarily having to hold it with both hands to do it. So I've got a nice set of demons that are in my stable. I think they've upgraded some of the fusion stuff, so you can pick the different skills for your demon that you're making. I'm not 100% sure on that. I need to pull out my DS copy of the original and see what that was all about. So far it's been pretty good, and I'm looking forward to playing some more. I think they got rid of the original English dub that they had in that game, so now it's just Japanese that comes up behind the dialogue, which is a little bit weird, especially when the nationalities are such that you would probably hear everybody speaking English for the most part, because they have people from most nations around the world on the various teams. So yeah, it's a little bit weird, but whatever, it's not a big deal. But yeah, so far it's been pretty good. It's nice to have a game like this. Though I'm at a weird part where they're introducing like obstacles in the dungeons, where you have like these fire floors, where you walk over them, you're going to take damage. But if I'm trying to fill out the whole map, I have to walk over them just to have that on there. Even though I found the alternate avenue to get around that stuff, that's a little bit. I kind of wish you could fill in stuff than just having to walk over it.
Yeah.
That's the one downside of the automap stuff. Just like, yeah, I know this fire floor is going to hurt me, but I have to walk over it just to be sure that it's mapped on there properly so I know where I can go. But yeah, it's pretty good. Looking forward to playing some more of that. And I was going to play more Fortnite. Now they put in a really interesting mode that's tying with the new Avengers movie, where Thanos is sort of the Infinity Gauntlet is put on the map, hidden somewhere. And so somebody finds it, and they become Thanos. And they have extra health. I think it's like 800 points of health versus 100. And I think they have 200 points of shield. And once they are, once they get the Infinity Gauntlets and become Thanos, they're instantly put on the map. You can pull the map and see exactly where they are. Yeah. Which kind of turns it into an interesting situation where it's almost kind of like a horror movie. Like that's the movie monster that's stalking people. Because it's just ultra powerful and all that. And people can team up to try to take it down, or they can just keep being Fortnite and try and take each other out. Mm-hmm. And lessen their chances to take down the Thanos. Which people also figure out that you can still do all the emotes as Thanos. So the silly dances and shit. So people have been doing that. Yeah, it's a pretty cool mode and a nice little twist on the regular stuff that that game is. I've only played that once or twice. Haven't been the Thanos yet. But yeah, it's a really cool mode, and it's nice to see them doing some neat tie-ins now that they're essentially the most popular game in the world right now.
Yep.
They are... And the weird thing is people are sort of speculating that they only have like 60 or 70,000 people on at a time, which I don't know that I believe that, but that might be true, just maybe on independent servers. Because unless you're partying with people on other platforms, you're just playing with people on your own platform. They don't have any cross-platform way to play against other people, unless it's, I think, the iOS version, the mobile version that I think you can match into the other servers, which is probably a bad idea. Unless you got the controller, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been fun to play. It's not a lot better than when PUBG had the Battle Royale loot boxes that you had to at least pay for with the in-game credits.
Yeah.
Because you weren't even guaranteed to get the cool stuff you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Like the actual, like, the tracksuit that, what's his name, wears. That thing probably still goes for quite a bit of money. You've either had to get very lucky and get it early on with your cheaper crates, or you had to pay a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
It's like, it would have been nice if that stuff was easier to get for free, versus just having to try and luck your way into it, or just buy it off the Steam Marketplace.
Yeah.
Especially if they would have had like a special map or mode that was more like Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still waiting for the Battle Royale game that has that style of mode.
Yeah.
Yep.
That would be cool to see. Because Radical Heights kind of has it, where there's the grids on the map that you will see will essentially auto-kill people that are still in them.
Yeah.
But the rest of it really isn't like Battle Royale that much.
Yeah. But I think Radical Heights is, it's still really early, but it's going to get there.
Yeah, which people are also freaking out, like, oh, they've only got, you know, 1,000 people playing it or whatever. And it's like, it's still free to play. They don't have to pick it up right now, especially when it's still pretty rough. Like, Fortnite Battle Royale didn't have that many people playing it at first.
Yeah.
It took a good, like, 8 to 10 months before it really kicked off. Once they started polishing it up a bit and getting it out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, people freak out too much on numbers, especially when it's free-to-play stuff. Now if it's a year from now and they're still at, you know, a couple hundred people, okay, maybe worry, but like they've got they're just started. You know, people are just getting it, trying it out, and then seeing how it evolves. Hopefully they got the good stuff, the good ideas to get that to where it needs to be.
Yeah. It doesn't cost anything to get in, so I mean, you can dip in, dip out when you want to.
Yeah, that's the rare kind of early access game that's free to play from the start.
Yeah.
Versus asking you to play or pay up front for the chance to try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been also fun to play, and I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, it's my turn. So, Yesterday, I started playing Conan Exiles. I'm sort of doing it before release, sort of my before I do my review. And I can't really tell you much more than that. Mostly because I've only just started.
Yeah, it's like when I played that when it was early access on Xbox One, they don't do much to teach you how to play.
Well, they do a little. They do tell you sort of basic what you have to do with the buttons. They teach you, you know, the way of like how to climb, how to swim.
Okay, they didn't have any of that when I was trying.
Yeah, they it's a bit more intuitive.
I was running around then dying. It's like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah, you know, they sort of give you the basic system and everything. It is very much like in the vein of a Conan game. You know, and if you've ever read Conan the Barbarian, you know, the original stories by Robert Howard or any of the ones that have come after him, you sort of have a general idea of what the sort of age of Conan is like. Mm-hmm. It's basically a desolate desert world with poppings of civilization in between.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever taken a chance to, like, go back and see, like, Robert E. Howard's original, like, map of the Hyborian Age that he made to go along with the Conan stories, basically it's the Middle East. Mm. You know, it's between the Middle East and North Africa. Just like in an age after Atlantis crumbled, but before modern civilization as we know it came into existence. And so you have, like, a lot of different, like, cultures that are sort of, like, precursors to a lot of the cultures that would come after. Like, you know, you've got, you know, the Picts, which are sort of like the – it's Howard's version of the Picts, not the actual Picts. But they're sort of the original indigenous people of England. You've got, you know, the Kush, who are the people of Africa. You've got – and descendants to the Egyptians, the Chinese, the Mongolians. And, of course, you've got the Sumerians, which is Conan's people, and the Hyperboreans, who were the people of Hyperborea, which was a fictitious sort of like the pagan version of the Garden of Eden, basically. And, yeah, Robert E. Howard's literary universe is kind of complicated, and it's not helped by the fact that, you know, he died when he was 30, so there's a lot of stuff that remains unfinished.
Yeah.
But, you know, gameplay-wise, it's a survival game with all that entails.
Okay, lots of beater management.
Yeah. Although it's not quite that difficult. I'm playing on what's called civilized mode since I'm kind of new to survival games. But depending on where on the difficulty level you choose, it can be harder.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, you've got, like, you can choose your character, you know, gender, male or female, physique, you know, what race or culture, what their religion is. So, like, if you're a Sumerian, you can actually choose to worship Crom, you know, like Conan.
Yeah.
You can, you know, like, what your, you know, like, what your voice is. You can have, like, a strong voice, or a savage voice, or a civilized voice, or a stoic voice. And, depending on, who your, what gender you choose, you can choose the side of your, the size of your, appendages.
Endowments.
Yeah, so if you're a male, you can make your, you can give yourself basically a fire hose. Or a novel.
Censored.
It's got a choice where it's nudity or partial nudity.
No.
I'm playing on PS4, so, you know, considering the game technically isn't, like, released yet, or hasn't, like, gone, technically hasn't gone live yet.
It went live on Tuesday.
Yeah, but there's partial nudity. Technically, right now the server has it set that there's no nudity at the moment.
Okay.
But I'm playing single player, so.
Because I remember the big thing being when it came to Xbox One.
Yeah.
Where the Steam was like, oh, they censor out the dongs.
Yeah.
And the only way you can maybe get around is changing your region to whatever region they might allow them. But
yeah,
I don't know if that actually was true or not.
I'm actually going to see if that works. But I mean, you know, it's an Eastern. It's from East. The game was made in Eastern Europe, right?
Right.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell. Because what's, like, the one defining feature of an Eastern European RPG?
Mm. Buggy.
Jank.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little janky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing I definitely remember from playing that. It's like, yeah, this is definitely early access.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's not as bad as I thought it would be.
No.
There are still some bugs here and there. Like, if you fall into, like, a really tiny gap, you might get stuck in, like, the jumping position.
Mm.
Or, like, you know, sort of in a loop of infinite hopping.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I managed to get out of it fairly easily, so.
Yeah.
The jumping animation is weirdly, like, Mario-y. But other than that, I mean, it's genuinely fun and compelling. I'll have more to talk about when I get further in, because right now I haven't even gotten to the first city yet, so.
Yeah.
I'm still, like, out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I just came up to, like, an oasis, so.
Yeah, I got to a lake-like mm-hmm. area.
Where there's, like, a bunch of palm trees and, like, you know, bushes.
Animals around and shit.
There's like, yeah, there's, like, those weird turtle monsters and yeah. A bunch of bandits that are camped out over there.
Yeah. That's where I was at, like, hanging out trying to collect stuff and build up something yeah. I could at least protect myself in.
Yeah. If you actually start with the civilized mode, it's actually like they give you a lot more to work with when you start off.
Okay.
Like there's plenty of like rocks and twigs and stuff you can pick up and plant matter. Yeah.
The first time I played, I died in that initial area.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did not know what I was doing. I think
yeah,
I
they give you a bed set. Like yeah, you have to craft a bedroll. To put
yeah.
somewhere, preferably somewhere that's sheltered, and you can basically use that to be your respawning point
yeah.
if you die. Unfortunately, you don't really lose anything if you die.
Yeah.
You know, as long all this stuff you crafted at that point, you still have
yeah.
when you
yeah.
die.
From what I've heard, they've completely overhauled the combat for this final...
Yeah, it's mostly button presses, like
before...
a regular attack and a strong attack.
Yeah, I want to say before it kind of felt like Minecraft combat.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm just swinging this and hopefully you're in the way when it gets to you.
Yeah. They got more like blocking now and also like offhand attacks too. But it is definitely a Conan game because holy shit is there a lot of blood. Just fucking everywhere. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing right now. I'll have more as I get further in.
Yep.
I've also, of course, doing books. I've got finally got the second volume of Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Finally getting around to reading it. They have now gotten up to publishing 6 volumes in English now. So I never thought I would live to see the day when all 10 volumes of the original series will be available in a language I can read. And there it is. It's fucking happening. Now I'm hoping they'll actually have enough to publish the 4 Gaiden books with all the side material in them. But we'll see. I also got this out of a recommendation to one of my favorite people on Twitter, which is James L. Sutter. For those who don't know who James L. Sutter is, he was one of the main guys to create Pathfinder. And he was also like the head of the creative team that created Starfinder, which is the sort of sci-fi-ish, I want to say spiritual sequel to Pathfinder, or like extension to Pathfinder.
Yeah.
You guys know what Pathfinder is, right?
Yeah, tabletop.
Yeah, it's like it's basically like D&D version 3.5.
Hmm.
You know, which is why I prefer it to regular D&D. But he's also a novelist and a musician, and he recommended a trio of space opera books for young adults called the Illuminae Trilogy. And I was like, well, what makes this so special? And then I found out what makes it so special. The books are basically made up, like the story is told by like found materials. So like web pages and blog posts, letters to each other, stuff, newspaper clippings, graphics, all that stuff. And I was like, holy crap, I gotta check this out. And I've only just started it and I'm already hooked. It's basically about these two kids who are like who live on this ice planet out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, they're young teenagers and they fall in love. And then suddenly these two like interplanetary corporations discover there's like all these minerals on this ice planet. And so they literally go to war over it. And so this completely foreign war just sort of splashes on top of this planet. And I was hooked. It's good stuff. Other than that, food and cooking, basically. I made a nice pot of red beans and rice for supper tonight, and I got still some left over. I might eat a little bit before I go to bed tonight. I don't know if you've ever made red beans and rice before. This is the Louisiana variety, which means that it's a short time of getting materials together and about like 3 or 4 hours of letting it cook. But it's good stuff. This week I went over to, we have a really famous soul food restaurant here in Macon called H&H. It's famous for the fact that, you know, like a lot of like, you know, pretty much all the music people in Macon have eaten there at one time. You know, the Allman Brothers, Little Richard, Ray Charles have all eaten there once or twice. Dr. King ate there a couple times back in the day. Oprah ate there back when she came to Macon a few years ago. It's a damn good place. It's, you know, sort of your standard meat and three type of establishment. And damn, it was good. Oh, they had to wheel me out on a carriage after I was done, because holy shit, they do not hold back on the portions, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. So I think that's all. So anybody got anything they want to add before we move on?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Well, I then believe it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so this week we had the 200th birthday of somebody who is sort of my one of my personal heroes, and also probably one of the most divisive figures in American history, and that was John Brown. Now, should I tell the story of who John Brown was?
Sure.
Okay. Do you guys know who John Brown was?
I'm Canadian, though.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
I probably heard it. I probably don't remember it.
Okay,
anymore.
So here's what you need to know. John Brown was a dude from, because I always forget where this guy was from. Anyway, he was originally from Connecticut. He was a hardcore anti-slavery abolitionist, like super hardcore. He was famous for the fact that he advocated armed insurrection in order to overturn slavery in the United States. During the 1856, there was a crisis that was called Bleeding Kansas. Basically, there was like a whole like debate over whether or not the newly created state of Kansas was going to be a, quote, free state or a slave state, which meant, you know, is it going to be a state that forbid slavery or allow slavery? And so it basically amounted into what was a small little civil war in the state of Kansas. So John Brown got a bunch of volunteers together, and he went and fought the anti-slavery. He fought the slavery, pro-slavery people in Kansas. Basically, he was really disappointed in sort of what was the quote-unquote mainstream abolitionist movement, because of the fact that they basically were, in his view, all talk. So in 1856, the May of that year, he and his supporters actually killed five slavery supporters after, as a response to the death of about six or seven abolitionists that had been killed by a pro-slavery force, and I think it was in Lawrence. No, I think it was in Kansas City. And then after that, he wanted to incite a full-on rebellion, a slave rebellion in the United States by going on what was called the raiding the federal armory in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. And it was basically, he meant well, but he was, and he actually had like good organization, but he was woefully outmanned and outgunned, because the idea was he was going to go into the armory, steal all the weapons, and then give them to all these slaves and freed slaves, and you know, and distribute them amongst the enslaved populations and have an insurrection. But didn't happen. He was faced within 36 hours by a group of U.S. Marines, which coincidentally was led by none other than Robert E. Lee. He was captured, he was arrested, he was tried for treason against the Commonwealth of Virginia, and then he was hung. And most people view this whole event, this whole arc of events, as sort of being the precursor to what would eventually be the American Civil War. Here's what a lot of people don't know, though, and this is sort of my random factoid. Do you know who was actually supposed to help join him in this endeavor, who was actually going to be with him at Harper's Ferry? Because a lot of people don't know this.
I have no clue.
Harriet Tubman, the woman who famously led the Underground Railroad.
Huh.
Yes, and keep in mind, Harriet Tubman was no pacifist. She kept a revolver on her at all times during her Underground Railroad work. Remember, and I'm guessing she's at least somewhat known in Canada, since that's ultimately where the Underground Railroad led to, was the Canadian border.
Yeah.
She also led a military operation for the Union during the sort of later end of the war. And I mean, she had like full Union uniform and rifle and everything. So she was by no means a person who was against using armed insurrection. The only reason she didn't end up being there was because she had pneumonia at the time. So she actually was not in health to actually join him. And I mean, arguably, that ended up being for the better, because had she joined him, she probably wouldn't have ended up dying with him.
Yeah.
But after he died, after John Brown died, actually, his, like, capture and, like, his trial was, like, an international thing. Like, everybody from, like, Walt Whitman to Victor Hugo were trying to argue for his release. Because he basically brought the slavery debate, basically, okay, so you have to understand, slavery has always been a controversial issue, in the United States, even before the country was founded. Like anybody who has ever read about the American Revolution and the Founding Fathers, as they were, knows that that issue, they had just a wide and diverse range of opinions. Like, you had everyone from, like, you know, people like Patrick Henry, who had no problem with slavery, to guys like Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, who didn't like the institution of slavery, but also owned slaves, to people like Alexander Hamilton, who not only despised the institution, but also believed that, you know, a multicultural, multiracial United States was completely possible and okay, and that black people were just as good as white people. And of course, that issue basically kept bubbling under the surface for the next 50 some odd years until finally John Brown finally brought it to the forefront, where people just couldn't deny it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't just mince words about it. There was, you know, once the subject of armed insurrection comes forward, frankly, something that, and like I said, John Brown is one of my personal heroes. As far as I'm concerned, armed insurrection in this case is completely justified. It suddenly it just became that there was no way out of it anymore. He famously said the last thing he wrote in sort of a letter he wrote before he was hung, he says, it's sort of considered to be his testament. It goes, I, John Brown, am now quite certain that the crimes of this guilty land will never be purged away but with blood. I had, as I now think, vainly flattered myself that without very much bloodshed it might be done. And turns out he was right.
Yeah.
Because, like 2 years, almost to the day that he was hung, the Confederacy was formed, and they fired on Fort Sumter. You know, it's like he knew exactly what was coming. So here's another thing. When John Brown was hung, amongst the people that were in the crowd of watching him was Stonewall Jackson, Thomas Stonewall Jackson, famous Confederate general. Walt Whitman, the famous poet, actually wrote a poem in his book Year of the Meteors where he describes his eyewitness account of Brown being hung. And finally, and probably like just one of those fantastic coincidences of history, John Wilkes Booth. The man who shot Lincoln. He actually had to borrow a militia uniform from one of his friends so he could gain admission to the execution. That's it. There were no... Most Northerners, including journalists, were basically forced out of the town that he was hung in because people in the city were afraid that if there were any that were allowed to witness the execution, it would basically result in hysteria. Because remember, he had almost complete support in the northern states at this point. Finally, I mean, there's a statue of him in Quindaro town site in Kansas. He is one of those figures that his opinion of him has always been changed depending on what sort of the quote-unquote mainstream view of him is. There are, you know, whenever someone paints his portrait, depending on how they want to view him, he'll either be viewed as like a wise old gentleman or as a crazy wide-eyed bearded fanatic. It completely depends on who is making the picture. He is, you know, he famously said, following his conviction, this is basically going to be the last thing I'll say before I end it here. He had a speech prepared that he spoke before his conviction. Well, after following his conviction. And it goes like here. He said, "Had I so interfered in behalf of the rich, the powerful, the intelligent, the so-called great, or in behalf of any of their friends, either father, mother, brother, sister, wife, or children, or any of that class, and suffered and sacrificed what I have in this interference, it would have been all right. And every man in this court would have deemed an act worthy of reward rather than punishment. This court acknowledges, as I suppose, the validity of the law of God. I see a book kissed here, which I suppose to be the Bible, or at least the New Testament. That teaches me that all things whatsoever I would that men should do to me, I should do even so to them. It teaches me further to remember them that are in bondage as bound with them. I endeavor to act up to that instruction. I say, I am yet too young to understand that God in any respecter of is any respecter of persons. I believe that to have interfered as I have done, as I have always freely admitted I have done in behalf of his despised poor, was not wrong, but right. Now, if it is deemed necessary that I should forfeit my life for the furtherance of the ends of justice and mingle my blood further with the blood of my children and with the blood of millions in this slave country whose rights are disregarded by wicked, cruel, and unjust enactments, I submit, so let it be done." And that has been Brandon's Random Factoid.
Alrighty.
Yeah, he's one of those figures in history that you really have to look into because he is just endlessly fascinating. Because he was both, like I said, he's one of my heroes. But he also had the bit of the religious nut in him as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, let us now start with the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week is a literal asshole in the ground. Mount Kilauea in Hawaii. A famous shield volcano. I forgot to mention that. It's Mount Kilauea is actually a shield volcano, which means that it's mostly flat. It's actually erupted again. And it's basically just causing outright havoc and is only getting worse. I think the last time that Mount Kilauea erupted, I think, was back in the 90s. People got to remember, this is how the Hawaiian Islands were founded. This is how they came into existence, or volcanoes coming out of the ground. And people would figure out by now, there's a volcano there. It's still active and has been active for centuries now.
It's going to erupt again sooner or later. Maybe not built there, but just...
Well, I mean, there's natives on there. They've always been there. But if you want to talk about the touristy assholes that live there... Chris, take it away.
Yeah, so... The volcano has been kind of spewing lava for the past week or so. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen videos of it crossing the street, engulfing somebody's car.
Yep.
In flames, a bunch of stuff like that. But it is also has the potential of getting even worse because there is a potential for what they call ballistic projectiles to be happening in the next couple months. Essentially, because as the lava continues to sink in the lake inside the Kilauea crater, the influx of groundwater could interact with the lava to create steam explosions. These forces would emit ballistic projectiles as small as pebbles or weighing up several tons.
Yep. And they're all on fire.
Yep, and it could just launch out of the volcano.
Yeah.
Which has caused them to very much get everybody on the island out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because on the fault line where they think this thing's where the lava is gonna go, is a geothermal plant.
Yep.
So they've had to take all of the tanks of gas and such they have there. Mm-hmm. And get it out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Because they do not want anything worse happening.
No.
They expect the plant to potentially get destroyed.
Yeah.
So they're trying to minimize the issues so you don't have anything even close to, like...
Well, I mean, obviously the building can be rebuilt. Unfortunately, and this is the good news, the folks on Hawaii have, they've rehearsed this shit several times. Yeah. They've taken care of most possible hazards. Because, again, Hawaii has had fairly regular volcano eruptions pretty much since recorded history. Yeah. And, like I said, the last time it really erupted was back in the 90s. So...
Yeah, and they...
They have experience, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and another part of this whole thing is not even just the lava itself. There's also toxic gas.
Yeah!
That's coming out of this thing. It is, let's see, they call it volcanic smog or bog.
Of course.
Yeah, I think it is like sulfur dioxide.
Yep.
Ooh, and nasty shit.
Yep. And sort of as the volcano and the tremors and earthquakes such that are going along with this are creating new cracks in the ground for fissures that either more gas can come out of that or more lava.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much concerned about this toxic gas at higher concentrations, it can cause headaches and irritation to the lungs and eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And if the trade winds become lighter, as predicted, it could pull northward over parts of the island by Friday. And it could actually just kind of sink and hang around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had about 1,700 people evacuated last week. 36 structures, including 26 homes, have been destroyed. And, yeah, I guess on Wednesday they had a 15th vent formed. Yeah. So, yeah, the governor has obviously asked for Trump to issue a disaster declaration for Hawaii to free up federal funds to help them
out.
State
of emergency, in other words. Yeah.
They expect the cost for this to exceed $2.9 million.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Well, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, this is – Hawaii is basically used to this type of stuff. It's happened many times. They kind of – they have experience dealing with this type of thing, so they know what to do.
Yeah, they got right down to it. I didn't see a whole lot of screaming or panicking going on. No. They just went for it.
It's like, yeah, shit. It's like, oh, fuck, she's erupting again. All right, time to go to mom's.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got enough earthquakes early on to tell them, hey, something's like, going on.
Oh, yeah.
We should probably get out of here. And, yeah, hopefully things can get back to normal at some point, but it seems like this is going to be going on for a little while.
Yeah. That's normally the volcanic eruptions when they happen in Hawaii tend to last about a few days. And it usually takes a little while for them to calm back down, but they do eventually. It's the reason if I act like I'm sort of like trying to downplay this, I'm not trying to. It's obviously a serious situation and bad things could happen. But fucking people on Twitter and Facebook are acting like the goddamn world is ending.
Yeah. It's not. It's just...
Like, I was in grade school when the last time that volcano erupted. Trust me, they've prepared for any eventualities. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, obviously a lot of people have lost pretty much most of their belongings, their homes, all that.
Yeah.
But I assume once they get the funds from the state of emergency and all that, they'll probably get reimbursed.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure a lot of that stuff is insured, too. So, yeah.
I think a lot of people don't have it because it's really expensive.
Yeah.
And the frequency that this happens is such that most people probably don't have it. That would be that.
Yeah, that's true.
Sort of like how a lot of people in California don't have earthquake insurance.
Because
it's overly expensive, and I've heard people say if it gets bad enough that you'll actually need it, there will be essentially state emergencies declared that will end up having the government pay for it anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
This isn't like flood insurance for the areas that have that issue where people just take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's generally trying to be doing it as a way to discourage people from moving into those areas.
Yeah. Right.
But people just take it as like, oh, free. We get free repairs. All right.
All right.
Our basement floods, you know, 5 times a year, but whatever, it doesn't pay it. We don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
No, that's not the lesson you should be taking from this.
No.
Should be taking the lesson that maybe you go somewhere where it's above ground, above the water level.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that, of course, was our asshole of the week. Literally an asshole in the ground. But we do have our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is none other than Russell Crowe.
Yeah, so
yeah, Russell Crowe. Yeah, we talked about this last week. Russell Crowe, of course, had his now infamous divorce auction. Yeah. And where he sold, like, you know, his jock strap and all that stuff.
A bunch of shit he doesn't need from that he kept from his movies.
Yeah, and everybody knows John Oliver actually, and you know, hit last week tonight. People, they bought a bunch of it and sent it off to, you know, a Blockbuster in Anchorage, Alaska, one of the few franchised ones.
Yep.
And so Russell Crowe has taken that, and he's actually going to name a koala which is going to be named Chlamydia Ward.
Well, no, this is honor. So yeah, he donated to the Australia Zoo, which is Steve Irwin's Australia Zoo. And they have a ward that is dedicated to the koalas, especially with their epidemic of them getting chlamydia. And so Russell Crowe donated about the $10,000 they spent on various items at the auction to the ward, and they ended up naming the ward after John Oliver. I think it's called the John Oliver Koala Chlamydia Ward, which there's a good bit YouTube video of him talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And basically at the end, let's see, that may honestly be the greatest thing I've ever seen. But he said, when we started this show, I wrote down the one thing I wanted to do and put it in this manila envelope and pulled it out, and it said, Koala Chlamydia Ward. And it's like, well, we've accomplished everything we set out to do. We're done. We're shutting it down. Basically joking that nothing can top this, which obviously is true. But yeah, there's a nice video from the Irwin family thanking Russell Crowe for his donations and also thanking John Oliver. And it's a great prank by Russell Crowe on John Oliver, as well as doing good work. Because if you watch the video from the John Oliver show, he had no idea that chlamydia is a thing with koalas, which, yeah, that's definitely been a thing. I remember hearing about that a lot. They have a lot of problems with chlamydia. And I guess the Australian Zoo has been working on potential cures for that. And so, yeah.
That's okay. That's a thing I didn't expect to hear this week. So, congrats.
Yeah. Especially because Russell Crowe, let's see, in his tweet, I think is such a wonderful random act of kindness that I'm planning now on how to best use the John Oliver money he spent on groin protectors and such. Given his often shown genuine love for Australians in Australia, it's got to be something special. Which he comments on the show, it's like, I've never shown love for Australia at all. he loves shitting on New Zealanders, which maybe that's good enough for them. He is constantly shit on New Zealand, especially their prime minister, I guess, who famously had somebody throw a dildo at him, hit him in the face. And so he proposed, they changed their flag because it looked pretty much just like Australia's. So he proposed a flag that had a picture of their prime minister getting hit in the face with a dildo. And they had Peter Jackson show it off, just wave it around. It's like, yeah, I think this is a great flag. It's like, okay, this is great shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely watch the John Oliver bit. As you can see him reveal what all is going on here.
All right. Well, now it's time for the proper show proper, and we start off with our first story of the night, which is Trump has decided to pull the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal, because of course he fucking did.
Yeah, so the whole setup for this is obviously Trump's been talking about how it's a terrible deal since he started campaigning. But a few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu had the big whole deal where he supposedly found evidence that they've been still working on nuclear weapons even after this deal happened, which Trump used as evidence that, oh, they've been lying and all this. It was all bullshit. Let's see. Yeah, so Trump said at the heart of the Iran deal was a giant fiction that was a murderous regime, desired only a peaceful nuclear energy program. He wanted to say that last week Israel published intelligence documents long sealed by Iran.
I also want to point out a lot of that was bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we now know it's mostly bullshit, but too late now.
Yeah, conclusively showing the Iranian regime and its history of pursuing nuclear weapons. The other part is that Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu presented a trove of Iranian documents. What's less accurate is that those documents added much to what the international community had known for some time. And so, yeah, these documents he supposedly revealed were from 2003, basically describing what they were doing in 2003. And it's like, that's everybody already knew that.
15 years ago.
Yeah. I guess these leaked out in 2008. Let's see, notes of a Vienna briefing on Iran by the chief inspector of the International Atomic Energy Agency leaked out, and that's where these came from. And even then, those were 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the briefing notes said the activities continued only into January 2004.
Yep. So, as you can probably imagine, the people in Iran are kind of pissed about this.
Yeah, especially a lot of the young people that were in support of the nuclear deal.
Mm-hmm.
They did not want their country having nuclear weapons.
Yeah. But it's not about them. It's all about Donnie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, here's the... There is sort of a light at the end of the tunnel here, because apparently they're now working that... So, okay. So, the U.S. is no longer involved in that deal, but remember that that deal was also made with a bunch of other countries as well, mostly in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to make a new deal with the European countries that were in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole thing with the nuclear deal is that it had to be essentially ratified every couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And if not all the members did that, it would expire.
Yeah.
And John Oliver did a recent show on the Iran deal,
because
it seemed like this was all going to come to a head at some point.
Yep.
And essentially, if it expired, Iran could just restart their nuclear program immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The whole bit he did is if you keep the deal, that's at least 10 years out. Mm-hmm. And zero is less than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of research on this to figure out that zero is less than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so by letting this expire, they could just restart it now versus in the distant future.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the whole thing is like, oh, Iran's willing to make this deal, but they've also said, yeah, if we can't come to a deal, we're just going to start the nuclear program back up again.
Yeah.
Well, this thing that they weren't even close to doing before.
Mm-hmm.
They can just do it right now if they want to.
Yeah.
All because of this dumb asshole.
Yeah. Now, if the Europeans do get together and manage to, like, get a new deal with the Iranians, that's basically going to be, like, the final nail in the coffin of American hegemony.
Pretty much.
Yeah, because essentially, they can't trust the U.S. with any deals, long-term deals.
No.
At least not as long as he is there.
Yeah, because... Which has been a thing. They had the G5 last year,
mm-hmm.
Where Trump essentially got his first meeting with most of the world leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after, or during that, he had to make a speech, had to essentially like mention their committal to protecting the other members of the G5 if an attack happens. And I think the whole thing was it was in the speech, and he had it removed right at the last minute, to which his aides were dumbfounded why he would want to do this. And so he went on, did a speech, didn't mention this, and I think Merkel noticed it especially, and basically had some sort of speaking engagement after all these events a couple days later, essentially said, yeah, we're on our own. We can't rely on the U.S. anymore. We're going to have to look after each other from now on.
Yeah. That explains the Ice Queen stare from her after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, So, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, in other news, we now know where the summit with North Korea is going to be held. It's going to be held on June 12th in Singapore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unless Trump backs out of that, too.
Yeah. Here's the thing. North and South Korea has actually – what a lot of people don't realize about the stuff that North and South Korea has been doing so far in the recent weeks is they've actually been doing this and have been doing a lot of this with keeping the U.S. and China at a distance.
Yeah.
Like most of this is by themselves between them and – not really, like, only giving the U.S. and China giving them a minimal audience here, because I guess even they have realized that, yeah, these two could fuck this up if we let them control this. So, yeah, let's try and get this done ourselves and keep those two at a distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they're holding it in Singapore.
So yeah. So hopefully when they go over there to Singapore, they'll go to one of the seafood places, get some delicious chili crab, and hopefully not try any graffiti, because then they'll get publicly flogged.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have you seen the stuff North Korea? They basically put out statements saying Donald Trump hasn't had shit to do with any of this.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as people are talking about, the Nobel Peace Prize, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the North Korea has been very much shitting on Trump.
Mm-hmm. And as for South Korea, you know that quote that's been going around the news about saying that Park Chung-hee, who's the current president of South Korea right now? I forgot his name.
Moon.
Yeah, of course it wasn't Park Chung-hee. Park Chung-hee was the military dictator of South Korea. Yeah. Fuck me. But yeah, that was a quote that said, yeah, Trump can have the Nobel Peace Prize. And everybody was like, yay, he says Trump can have the Peace Prize. If you read the actual quote, he says, you know, Trump can have the Peace Prize, we just want peace.
Yeah. It's like, you can have the prize, we want the stuff that actually matters.
Yeah.
It's like sort of the whole thing of, we're getting peace over here in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And shit's starting up in Iran again.
Yeah.
Yep.
God damn it. Well.
And speaking of shit.
Yeah, speaking of shit, we now know who the next president of the National Rifle Association is going to be. And we swear to God, this is not from The Onion. It's going to be former Reagan official and convicted felon
and traitor
Oliver North.
I guess if you need somebody with expertise in arming terrorists, Oliver North is your number one guy.
Yeah.
Oh God, where to begin?
I would say look up American Dad, Oliver North.
Ollie North, the Ollie North song. Yeah.
Yeah. They did a great, kind of Schoolhouse Rock style song about Oliver North.
Yeah.
And
but to sort of give you a summary right now.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, there was a socialist revolution going on in the country of Nicaragua. It was the Sandinistas. The Sandinistas, first of all, weren't communists. That is important to point out. Their ideology is actually very specific, very different from, quote, old-school Marxism-Leninism, which was the ideology of the Soviet Union. Their ideology is called Sandinismo because their whole socialist ideology gets its origins from a man named Augusto Sandino, who was a resist freedom fighter and bandit in Nicaragua during American occupation. So the Sandinistas had their revolution, and they had gained control of the government of Nicaragua. So the U.S., as it always does, got into the quote-unquote domino effect, and they started sending money out to the Contras, who were the counter-revolutionaries, who had far-right death squads that would basically just go around Nicaragua and just kill villages full of people, you know? Oh, yeah, and they were also involved in the drug trade. They were coke slingers. And the CIA actually helped them do that once or twice. Yeah. And so when Congress found out that we were helping the Contras deal drugs, remember, this was the Reagan era. And what was the whole thing with Reagan and the war on drugs?
Yeah, that whole winners don't do drugs thing.
Yeah, just say no.
Just say no.
So Congress found out and they said, fuck it. We'll pull funding. Fuck you people. So Reagan and Bush and his people got together and said, we'll just overstep Congress and we'll get funding another way. So they did two things. The first thing is they created these sort of shell charities that were meant to, like, pull at people's heartstrings about, we're fighting for freedom in Nicaragua, please send money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they had this other idea. Let's sell missiles to Iran.
And didn't they help them set up a nuclear plant?
Yep. Yes, they did.
Well, hey, you created your own problem.
Yeah. They totally did that.
And then the
press... good at that, by the way.
Yeah, and then the press found out, and holy shit, It really could have blown up in all their faces because what they did is, you know, technically under law, high treason.
Yeah.
Which meant that literally everyone in the Reagan administration could have gotten the chair.
Yeah.
Because treason gets you a death sentence in the United States.
Mm.
Well, can get you a death sentence in the United States.
Yeah.
Because the Constitution very specifically points out what is considered treason in the United States. And giving aid and comfort to the country's enemies is one of them. And, what would you say giving missiles to an enemy power like Iran would be?
Yeah, I think that qualifies.
Yeah, so what happened? They got a woman named Fawn Hall. That was her name. She tried to cover it up by, putting the money through Swiss bank accounts and stuff. And then she started shredding papers. And then finally, it was decided that Ollie North would be the guy who would fall on his sword and take the rap for all of it.
Hmm.
He, of course, was then given a presidential pardon.
Yeah, of course he was.
And since then, he's been, he's done speaking tours, he writes books. Of course, he has a regular thing on Fox News. And he has never, far as I know, he has never spent a single day behind bars because of what he did.
Mm.
And now he's going to be president of the National Rifle Association.
Yeah, for years he was on Fox News.
Yep.
Because they like their traitors over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only good thing is that at least now the NRA has someone at their head that you can genuinely hate.
Yeah.
More than their previous...
because it basically just shows that all that bullshit about, America and patriotism and values, they really don't care.
Yeah.
They have no morals.
Nope.
Yeah. So they talked to the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence co-president Chris Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Refer to him as a walking lightning rod. Mm-hmm. Oliver North's very name is synonymous with corruption and disgrace. Conveniently, they could not get a comment from the NRA itself.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to become president within a few weeks and is retiring from Fox News. So at least you won't have to hear him talk on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he conveniently will be a guest on often.
Yeah. God, I feel dirty just reading that shit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, fucking G. Gordon Liddy is a correspondent on that channel.
Yeah.
Nope. Like I said, these people have no morals.
Nope.
And speaking of people that have no morals, so those you don't know, John McCain... he's got cancer. He's probably going to die soon.
Yeah.
He made his statement on Gina Haspel's nomination. Those you don't know, Gina Haspel, was she being nominated for again? like a
CIA director.
Yeah, she also was sort of may have been, probably was culpable in some of the quote unquote enhanced interrogation techniques that happened during the Bush administration and afterwards.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for those who don't know, John McCain was a POW in Vietnam, and he underwent torture himself.
Yeah, and she kept dodging questions about the immorality of torture.
Yeah. And just the most blatant legal speak you could think of.
Yeah.
It was Kamala Harris that was trying to just say, yes or no, do you believe torture is immoral?
Yeah.
She's like, well, I don't just speak around it and never want to say yes or no.
And try and run out the clock.
Yeah.
So McCain, of course, he was tortured. It was awful. So, of course, one of the aides at the White House just had to mock him.
Yep, saying his opinion doesn't matter because he's dying anyway.
That's like fucking teenager shit.
Yeah.
Are we fucking surprised?
They are a bunch of fucking children. I swear to God.
Yep. So very much his daughter, Meghan McCain, who's on The View, talked a lot about this. Well, not talking about a lot, but kind of just shitting on these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't just this aide as well. There was a man by the name of, retired Air Force Lieutenant General Tom McInerney was mm-hmm. on Fox Business.
Oh, God, yes.
Talking to Charles Payne.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his, Charles Payne's side of this was that he was getting word from the producer that they needed to wrap up their segment.
Yeah.
And this was when this guy was talking about torture, saying that it worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John, which nobody calls him that, except for alt-right douchebags that nobody pays attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's him outing himself
as
being part of the alt-right. So, so Payne obviously apologized for that, saying he wish he had been paying more attention so he could have just called him out then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they said that Tom McInerney is not going to be on any Fox station from that one.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been effectively banned. So that was also part of what Meghan McCain was responding to.
Yep.
As well as Cindy McCain, his wife, she responded directly to the AIDS Twitter account,
mm-hmm.
which is Kelly Sadler. She is one of his special assistants.
Mm-hmm.
She said, may I remind you, my husband has a family, 7 children and 5 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be talking to people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't care.
Oh.
Because like I said, these are the children of fucking Roger Stone. They don't, that whole era in politics, they really do not care. They have no morals.
Yeah, and the president just comes up with ways to insult people constantly.
Mm-hmm.
He encourages this stuff.
Yep. But, all right, so next up, we finally had the first wave of Senate and House primaries here in the U.S. over the last week, and we've now got the winners and losers.
Yep, so, the Washington Post here has, like, a list of winners and losers from the first wave of primary stuff. Mm-hmm. The winners, the GOP's nightmare scenario. It's a pretty low bar to say you've won because a clearly disastrous candidate lost your primary.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a special case because Don Blankenship lost his
primary. Yep, he came in third.
Yep. And it was a whole weird scenario where supposed GOP polls were saying he was surging.
Yeah.
But he ended up losing quite handedly to Senator Joe Manchin. He's going to be, I forget who the, distant third behind Patrick Morrissey and Evan Jenkins. He still got around 20% of the vote, which is crazy. But yeah, Joe Manchin is the incumbent, I guess. So he will be the main competitor for that race. Actually, women did really well.
Mm-hmm.
About 80% of the women that ran for representative races won.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think, a few of those were even black women. So that's good. We definitely noted that women and minorities are going to be big in this potential blue wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so far that is definitely happening.
Yeah.
For the record, and I just want to point this out because I want to, and I'm probably going to mention this until the elections finally come. When we talk about the blue wave, don't let the news of the blue wave make you complacent.
No.
Because that only happens if you actually go out and vote.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I want you to understand, the Trump people, their numbers may have diminished somewhat, but they are still every bit as fanatic as they were during the election. So,
you
know, don't...
You actually need to show up.
Yeah, yeah, don't be complacent. You actually need to put the work in here.
Yeah.
And I do understand that, you know, the way that, because, you know, our elections are basically run by the state government, the way that they can kind of fuck people over there. But, you know, there's a lot at stake here, so...
Yep. Let's see. There is another winner is the state legislatures that Democrats mm-hmm. are starting to win more seats in so they can potentially get more control over redistricting
mm-hmm.
For the gerrymandering stuff. Yeah, I guess who else won? The vice president's brother.
Yep.
Greg. Got the GOP nomination in their 6th congressional district in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So he is potentially going to get a House seat, I think it is.
Yeah.
But also, let's see. Losers, members of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of people that ran in their primaries lost. Yeah, the Indiana... primary, the Republican one lost Evan Jenkins, so he's no longer going to be that. Yeah, so hey, that's it's pretty good. That's showing that people are definitely tired of the people that are not doing much in Congress right now.
Yeah. I wonder if they break out by state. Let's see what happened in Massachusetts.
I think... Primarily, the ones that have been voting for this round was Ohio, West Virginia, Indiana, and North Carolina, I think. Okay, it was a few states.
Yeah, so that hasn't happened.
Indiana, Ohio, and West Virginia.
Yeah.
Ohio definitely saw a big thing happen. Dennis Kucinich lost his run for the governorship.
Hmm.
Lost right out of the gate on the primary. I think it was something like 70 to 30. The winner was Richard Cordray, who was head of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau when Obama set that up.
Yeah.
Helped get a take the Wall Street banks to task.
Yeah.
So he definitely won in a big landslide. And the funny thing is when they show all the different counties here, how they voted, the third place person actually won two counties to Kucinich's none. He won his two home counties, the two right around where he lived. Kucinich won none of them.
Hmm.
And Cordray took all the rest, which is hilarious. And it's good to see Kucinich go down because nobody needs him.
Yeah.
He had his time, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
He tried to run essentially like he was Bernie Sanders. And it's like, nobody fucking believes he's Bernie Sanders here. And the Republican side, Mary Taylor lost, who was the woman that was trying to suggest that she was the Trump candidate.
Yeah.
Even though nobody believed that. She kept running the ads that said the other guy, Mike DeWine, was too liberal for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up winning like 60 to 40.
Well, it seems even the Republicans are getting sick of this shit.
Yeah, he's the attorney general right now.
Yeah.
Under Kasich.
Mm-hmm.
So he still has some sway just for being where he's at. So that's going to be DeWine versus Cordray for the governorship here.
All right.
And that's going to potentially be a big one because we're obviously a swing state.
Yep.
And if a Democrat can take that governor role, that'll be big news for this state.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, it looks like there's a shift as long as people show up.
Yeah. They're at least showing up right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the whole strategy of trying to show who has the biggest Trump dick is not one that's guaranteed to give you
success. Seems to be a losing strategy.
Yeah.
You need to actually put forth your own agenda.
Yeah.
Not just try and ride the coattails of a guy who has, what, 35% approval?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a great percentage to try to ride
the coattails. Includes a large percentage of Republicans, too. We need to point that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still overwhelmingly positive towards him, but not as much.
The cracks are showing, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
So next up, Uber. Uber is partnering up with NASA and the U.S. Army. Why are they doing this? Because they want to create a new flying taxi project.
Yep, they were showing this off. Let's see, they unveiled this at Tuesday, part of their Uber Elevate conference.
Mm-hmm.
In LA, which they have some videos and pictures here of the taxi they're looking at, which kind of looks like a plane, but with like buoys on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like sort of the way you have some of the planes that can land in water.
Yeah.
It's like those are up in the, like instead of wings, it's sort of these buoys with big propellers on them. So they're calling this, let's see, what are they calling this? An electrically powered vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, eVTOL.
Ambitious.
Yeah. Yep. It has wing-mounted propellers to provide lift, like a helicopter, and a tail-mounted propeller to generate forward thrust like a plane.
Yeah.
As they say, there's no magic or a huge leap of science that needs to occur here. So they're targeting 2020 to have these demonstrated in Dallas, LA, and Dubai, the first three cities they partnered with for this stuff. They're hoping to get commercial fly sharing network to start in 2023 called Uber Air. I guess they made reference to the Jetsons. As far as how this would work, where people fly around in car-like vehicles, land in dedicated docking ports. They've entered into real estate partnerships with Hillwood Properties and Sandstone Properties to develop these skyports.
Yep. You know, actually, this reminds me a lot of the... I say reminds me a lot. It kind of reminds me of the flying cars from The Dark Forest. The second book in the three-body problem. Although I think those were powered with microwaves or something.
Yeah, they had some weird wireless power thing that they had developed. I don't know how that even works because we haven't figured it out yet. So.
No.
Yeah. These eVTOLs are capable of cruising at about 200 miles per hour, heights of about 1 to 2,000 feet, and they can travel about 60 miles on a single charge. Can recharge in about 5 minutes, which it's not too bad.
Yeah, so short trips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like we would probably park at a garage or something like that and take the eVTOL to your business.
Place of work, something like that.
Yeah. Somewhere nearby at least.
Yeah.
That you could essentially walk over. And that'd probably actually be good for congestion in some of these cities, because LA is noted as a hellhole for trying to commute in. And if you could be able to park on like the outskirts of town and fly in to get to your workplace, that'd probably help out a huge, huge time. But because I know I hear people jump all the time, you know, you get off work at 5 and you can get home at 8 o'clock, even like a what would normally be like a 30-minute drive.
Yeah,
because everybody's trying to get out of town at that point.
Yeah, you notice all of Uber's initiatives lately. They got the self-driving car thing. They got their trucks. What else do they have? Well, this. They have Uber Eats. They're doing all this because their current business model with ride-sharing actually doesn't make any money.
No, they're kind of just trying to take the human equation out completely.
Yeah, well, their entire business model doesn't make any sense or is not financially viable unless you get the humans out of the equation.
Yeah.
So
also, it just kind of sucks working for them. So.
Well, it used to. It seems to be a bit better now, so I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I think this could actually work pretty darn well if the engineering is there. I noticed I didn't. Did it mention in the article if these eVTOLs are supposed to be autonomous or not?
I think the sketches they have a pilot in there.
Yeah.
That might be something that's eventually evolved to autonomous.
Yeah.
I think for right now, that's probably a little bit much.
Yeah.
I believe the partnership with the Army is in relation to the rotors on this stuff. And with NASA's trying to figure out good flight paths for this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily working with them directly. It's like a lot of research and development sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the FAA that has to come into this.
Eventually. Yeah. 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 So for the Army part, it's new technological development is a pair of stacked co-rotating propellers, which makes the ride quieter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty neat stuff.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, so moving on from there, this is a story out of Canada, out of Phil's neck of the woods, out of Ontario. And, you know, this is just one of those more another signs that people in the U.S. think that Canada really is a godless commie hellhole. Ontario officially issued its first non-binary birth certificate.
Yep.
And just you can just hear those popping noises you hear is like the entire Trump base heads exploding.
Yeah.
What? It doesn't say male or female? What the fuck? Who are these people? The first person is Joshua Ferguson, who petitioned them, I think, last year for this. So it's taken them a while to get this all settled. But yeah, he changed his birth certificate from male to non-binary. Identifies as neither male nor female. And obviously prefers the pronoun they.
Yeah.
So the first step for the trans community to be able to get their birth certificates changed as needed, hopefully with a little less wait time. But I imagine that's probably something in the works of streamlining all this.
Yeah. Well, once you get one through, then there's precedent, and then you know things start to move after that.
Yeah. And this is sort of a wave of non-binary official documentation that Ontario has been doing of late. So I guess now they have several options for birth certificates. You can have your gender removed altogether if you want as well.
Yeah.
For non-binary, it's just they put an X in there instead of MRF. So Ontario issued its first gender-neutral driving licenses and health identification cards last year. They will soon give Canadians the option to choose a third gender option when applying for a passport. so that'll be nice. Let's see. As I mentioned, California has passed legislation last year to allow non-binary as an option for birth certificates.
Yeah.
That will go into effect later this year.
Yeah. So this stuff is happening. Gender fluidity? Yeah, it's a thing, people.
Yeah, it's now, and I'm guessing since this is usually how shit goes in Canada, this starts in Ontario. This is probably going to start happening in the other provinces, too.
Yeah, well, there was a story that happened in BC as well, so yeah, it's kind of moving around right now.
Yeah. That's kind of, that really is how, like, a lot of the big stuff in Canada happens. Yeah. Like, it starts in one province, and then all the other provinces are like, hey, it's not a bad idea. Let's give that a shot. And then eventually it's the whole country.
Yep.
That's how they ended up getting their health system and gay marriage. Mm-hmm. So, wouldn't it be nice if we could do that in the U.S. instead of always having to take it to the fucking Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Well, anyway. So next up, and this is like a super uber serious situation, guys. Yeah, there's a vanilla shortage. There's a vanilla shortage, guys, which means that the prices are skyrocketing, and it's causing and it's affecting the cost of your ice cream. Panic!
Yep. So do you know where the vast majority of vanilla is grown?
I think it's like in South America.
It is Madagascar.
Oh.
Africa.
Yeah. Yep. Over 75% is grown there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened last year? There was a cyclone that damaged a lot of these plantations. So that has affected their ability to produce, especially as demand has not waned. And so now it is the second most expensive spice in the world. Behind saffron. And it costs about $600 per kilo.
Oof.
And it costs more than silver. Just to give you an idea of how expensive this stuff is. And so this particular story is set in the UK. So they talk about a couple of local farms that produce their own ice cream. One called Snugberries. Run by three sisters near Nantwich in Cheshire. They do about 5 tons of ice cream per week, and about a third of their 40 flavors contain vanilla in some form. Now they are paying their supplier about 30 times more for the extract than they did in previous years. So what their solution has been is to buy a year's worth up front.
Yep.
Essentially bank on the cost not dropping. Yeah. Anytime soon. And also had to make a decision whether they would absorb the cost or pass it on to the customer, and I guess they decided to absorb it.
Oof.
So they're going to keep the prices low and hope that the volume probably makes up for it. But they also talked to another maker called Ruby Violet. I guess they're artisanal. And they've basically said vanilla is off the menu for the foreseeable future because they can't afford the thousands of pounds it would cost. And I assume this is going to make synthetic vanilla become very popular.
Yeah, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And so there are three other countries that produce vanilla. Obviously much smaller amounts, Papua New Guinea, India, and Uganda. But yeah, a lot of the vanilla goes to America, because obviously ice cream is huge here. But vanilla is also used in sweet foods, alcohol, as well as cosmetics and perfumes.
I'm not sure. I don't think your Ben and Jerry's is going to go up in price, because they're large enough that they can afford to absorb that.
Yeah,
for the smaller artisanal shops that like to make their own homemade style ice cream, that hurts.
Yeah, imagine the big companies probably buy in such bulk. That it's probably gone up, but it's probably not too prohibitive for them.
Yeah. Fortunately for me, I don't like ice cream anyway, so I'm good. Yeah, I know. I get that all the time. I don't like cold foods in general. Mm. That also includes like yogurt and popsicles. Mm. So, but yeah. So next up, Google's AI assistant. Yeah, it's advancing, and it's at the point now where soon it's going to be able to make calls for you.
Yeah. But just,
yeah.
Did you listen to any of these? Because they're amazing and creepy.
Yeah, you really should. Everybody who's listening, you really need to. Yeah, so Chris, take it away.
Yeah, so it is revealed that their AI assistance is kind of advanced enough now that it can start making calls for you, especially to make appointments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that people don't want to call their doctors or whatever about, which is actually kind of a good idea.
Yeah.
I just say, hey, you go fucking do this. I don't want to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is it kind of sounds realistic.
Yep.
Yeah. In a kind of way that people immediately are like, how are these people going to know that these are not real people calling them? Like, how is it not going to get to the wrong hands and get used for nefarious means?
Yeah.
And Google sort of came back and clarified that they have disclosure built into the system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it'll say up front that, you know, this is an AI and
calling on behalf of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this tech is pretty cool, especially growing from probably the sort of voice, computer voice stuff we've seen over the last like 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the application of that whole WaveNet project that Google's been working on for the past several years.
Yep.
Yeah. That is running on DeepMind.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the future is getting more and more interesting.
Yeah. This also has good applications for Google themselves. I should point out, mm-hmm. it's like if you're a company like Google that does Google Local, and you want to say keep your opening hours updated and find out whether a particular place is going to be open for holidays or not, you can use this to call that place up and find out.
Yes, you can.
Yeah,
so. All right. Well, moving on from there. Now we've entered into the entertainment portion of the show.
Yep.
Dr. Dre, he's been a part of our popular culture pretty much since the 80s.
Yeah.
And he and NWA premiered.
Yeah.
By the way, great album.
Hmm.
You know, Straight Outta Compton, fantastic album.
Yep.
It's like a Desert Island disc.
Hmm.
Yeah, he recently lost a trademark battle with a gynecologist named Dr. Dre.
Yeah, that's D-R-A-I.
Yeah.
His real name is Dreon M. Birch.
Mm.
It goes by Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre sued him over the sort of confusion aspect of the trademark, but
mm-hmm.
I guess the U.S. Trademark Office has said, yeah, no.
Yeah.
One of these people is an actual doctor.
Yeah. Said while the two names are similar, Dr. Dre has failed to show that people would be misled into buying Dr. Dre, the gynecologist product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the doctor's typical fee for speaking engagement is $5,000. The consumer would be likely to exercise a higher degree of care than someone making a casual purchase. And also, as they say, because Dr. Dre is not a medical doctor, nor is he qualified to provide any type of medical services or sell products specifically in the medical or healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
Which, damn, just blowing up his thing like that.
Yeah,
it's basically you can't really use that trademark.
You're not an actual doctor, Dr. Dre.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be suing actual doctors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, next up, we got some Nine Inch Nails news. I like Nine Inch Nails. I've always loved Nine Inch Nails.
Hmm.
Basically, anything Trent Reznor does in general, just good shit. They're fixing to do a new tour, and they've announced that they're only going to be selling tickets in person.
Hmm. This is weird. So,
yeah, it's a good way of avoiding the whole shit fiasco that happens whenever any big band has their tickets go on sale on Ticketmaster or wherever.
Yeah, they sell out for a minute and then they get scalped.
Yeah. And they put up a tweet outlining their decisions here. Say all seats, including the best seats, will be available for purchase in person only. First come, first served. Fans can purchase up to 4 tickets per show. And they link to their full list of box office locations. Further information, they might release limited quantities of tickets later on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're also a bit sarcastic in another description. Here's how it works. You, an actual human being, show up at the box office, interact with the ticket seller, another actual human being, and purchase up to 4 tickets that will actually be handed to you on the spot. Tickets will not be available online or anywhere else before or during
the day.
Sounds
good to me.
All seats, including the best seats, yeah, it's... you may actually encounter other actual human beings with similar interests, likely wearing black clothing, during the process and potentially interact with them. The experience has the potential, to be enjoyable. Nine Inch Nails has always been about bringing people together, living life to the fullest, and good times. So, the first one, not guaranteed. They say the experience has the potential to be enjoyable. Yeah, when they say... Nine Inch Nails has always been about bringing people together, living life to the fullest in good times. Not entirely true. So, yeah.
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 This is great.
It is very Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Is...
Well, I mean, if you're going to do it, you know, you go actually go out and put in the effort to get the tickets for the band that you want to go see. I mean,
I've actually gone to a ticket agent once to get tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It was like kind of in the early days of Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
I had to go inside a JCPenney. That was the weirdest thing. It's like, wait, this is in the department store? It wasn't like an easy to access place. It was like way in the back by, I think, where they do returns.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you take a right here and it's this other room. And it's like, this is fucking weird as hell.
Yeah.
But it might actually be preferable to paying the jacked up prices of Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Anyway, next up, somebody has gone into a warehouse in L.A. and stolen the original Iron Man suit. So the LAPD is actually out looking for this thing.
Yep. So the suit is valued at about $325,000. Vanished from a prop storage warehouse, in L.A., somewhere between February and late April. They figured this out because the employees at the warehouse just happened to check for it on this past Tuesday and noticed that it was gone. It's like, oh yeah, we got that Iron Man suit here, huh? Yeah, let's look up where it's at. It's not here.
Where'd it go? Thanos?
Shit!
Yep, so... Yeah, if you've seen anybody... wearing it or stashing around somewhere, call the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Robert Downey Jr. He might want it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, next up. Well, after God knows how many years, we now have a third Bill and Ted movie. It's called Bill and Ted Face the Music, and it was officially announced this week.
Yep. They're hoping to get it out next year for the 30th anniversary of the original movie. So, yeah, the story, let's see, they're going to have Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter back, as well as the creators.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. The director is going to be Dean Parisote. Did Galaxy Quest, Red 2, Fun with Dick and Jane. Let's see. MGM owns the rights to the film, releasing under Orion Pictures. Bill and Ted Face the Music will see the duo long past their days as time traveling teenagers, now weighed down by middle age and the responsibilities of family. They've written thousands of tunes, but they have yet to write a good one, much less the greatest song ever written. With the fabric of time and space tearing around them, a visitor from the future warns our heroes that only their song can save life as we know it.
Yep.
Out of luck and fresh out of inspiration, Bill and Ted set out on a time travel adventure to seek that song that will set their world right and bring harmony in the universe. Together with the aid of their daughters, a new crop of historical figures, and some sympathetic music legends, they find much, much more than just a song.
So it's basically the same plot of the other two.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's fine, because it works.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. And, you know, with Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves both being as old as they are now, your options are kind of limited.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and yeah, there obviously hasn't been one of those movies in a long time.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be something that, if they do a good job writing it, it'll actually work pretty well. It's like a, oh, these guys, you remember the 90s sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the first one was in the 80s, but yeah.
89.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Barely. Mm-hmm. Simpsons started in 89.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, all right, so next up, we finally know it now, because this shit's been in the air for weeks. Rick and Morty has gotten renewed. Yep. And not only that, but Justin Roiland himself announced that there's a huge 70-episode renewal.
So it's like, yeah, not only did they renew it, they, like, renewed it hardcore.
Yeah.
10 episodes a season, so that's 7 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
7 seasons.
Yeah, so that's going to be pretty crazy, and obviously now I no longer want to talk to people that are excited about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about Rick and Morty until 2028.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, and I don't want to talk to people like Rick and Morty. Most of them.
I haven't even tried watching Rick and Morty yet. Maybe I should. Probably not.
Yeah, I would say give it a shot.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Right. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
It's not stomp around in a McDonald's good, but...
Hmm. But what is?
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, some sad news, but unfortunately predictable, because this is kind of a thing Fox does. Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been canceled.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because, unfortunately, Fox just has this pattern of taking some of their best shows and just canceling them out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yep. The nice thing about the reaction to this is now everybody's like, oh, hey, Netflix, here's something for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Hulu or one of the others, like, hey, guys, here's something that's being served up just for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like Fox doesn't want to make it, but people still want to watch it, so.
Yeah.
You guys want people to sign up for your networks? Yeah, hey, you, Netflix, and your upcoming Arrested Development Season 5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your Fuller House, your, you know, all these different series they've brought back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring this back, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spend some of that Disney money on your on this, because that show is really good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And legitimately hilarious.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I haven't seen a ton of it. I think I've seen 2 seasons,
mm-hmm.
2 or 3, whatever was on Netflix at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that show would be really funny.
Mm.
But
no, it's really, really funny.
Yeah.
Mm. And finally, our last story for the night. We now have a trailer for the Predator reboot.
Yeah, and it doesn't look too bad, actually.
Nope.
Yeah, it seems fine.
Yeah, it looks kind of totally average.
Yeah. It seems kind of weird when you compare it to the original.
Yeah.
That was kind of all about isolation.
Yeah.
And here, the Predator is fucking shit up in the city.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, like, out in the open, like, people fucking see him.
Yeah.
It was, like, weird. Because I think, like, the whole thing with the original is you don't really see the Predator very much.
Yeah, because he has a cloaking device.
Yeah, and you see a lot of his vision of the other guys. And kind of having, like, a Jaws thing going on.
Yeah.
Which plays up the suspense. And here it's kind of like, oh, it's kind of an action movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could still be good. It's being directed by Shane Black, which when they showed up in the trailer, like, from the director of Iron Man 3. I was like, oh god, no, that that movie sucked. That's the bad Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
That's the one where it was more about Tony Stark than Iron Man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do believe we got a show. So I would like to remind our listeners, if you would like to write into the show, have a question you want to ask, have something you want us to read on the air, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little recorded shenanigans at archive.org, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, and just about any place that you can find recorded unscripted shenanigans like ours. So, with that, I have been your host, Brendan Perkins. Joining me, as always, has been Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Elogi. We're telling you good night. Remember, your ear mouths will bite.